readings today talk about something that is extremely evident in our life, and it touches me personally to the heart, and that is revenge. And in the first reading from Leviticus, we're reminded of one characteristic of holiness, an imitation of the Lord, that boils down into not letting anger take a hold of our hearts. And the teaching seems to be framed around a command of the Lord that we hear in the gospel to be an imitation of him, to be holy. So we know that Jesus even has something to teach us in the Old Testament of how to be holy. Now, what we don't hear is not that we shouldn't be angry, because we all know that anger is an emotion that is a response of hurt that each one of us can feel. And in fact, in the scriptures, there seems to be indications of a something called righteous anger. And we hear that sometimes talked about in terms of God's anger. What the biblical definition of God's anger is a repugnance for sin and God's wanting to reverse that. So he says not to let the anger seep into our hearts. It's not letting something upset you to the point of letting that love break between you and the other person. And we see sometimes in our culture anger depicted as power. So think of, for example, in the Marvel characters, the Incredible Hulk. That's an obvious way of how anger is depicted as power. And the anger gives the character extreme power so that he can return justice to a situation through his own abilities. And those abilities appear to be godlike. Yet that anger at the same time causes turmoil within him as he seeks to find a cure for it. And we all know that Christianity has that cure. Grudges and a desire for revenge are a sign that you have let something upsetting seep into your heart and taint your love for the person responsible. It's a disruption of the unity that God desires in our relationships. And we can see this manifested in our culture. So, for example, think of this. How many movies and television programs have depicted two bitter enemies glaring at each other with disgust and saying, "I'll see you in hell"? Now, that thought alone should chill us to the bone. It's a lose-lose situation. And as Christians, we are reminded that payback is not sweet. With the explosion of social media and revenge being a recurring theme in movies and television, it's no surprise that relishing payback has almost become a national pastime. And so when faced with these temptations, we need to strive to be neither the match nor the kindling that flames the desire for revenge. So if we're on Facebook and someone shares a payback moment or perhaps even a rude comment, douse that flame. Don't share it. Don't like it. And if you see the need, perhaps practice some fraternal correction, maybe offline. Or if you're in a conversation when someone gets heated or is venting, don't add fuel to the fire. I've tried telling my wife that, and that's hard to do in any given situation. But when faced with anger, there is a situation that we all need to face, and that is the fact that in our history, we've had examples of people that have responded with true strength. One example that I can think of is, maybe you remember this, a few years ago back in the East, I think it was in Pennsylvania, there was a shooter that went into an Amish community and shot up a bunch of kids in their schools. Think of how that Amish community responded to that. They responded with strictly forgiveness. No anger, no revenge, and they even reached out to the shooter's parents and family to help them as well. So we have examples of how to respond to that revenge. But we all know that the person who is angry wants us to respond in anger so that we fall into their trap. But when we, through God's grace, decide to respond in other ways, it acts as a way to disarm their violence. So following along with that, in the second reading, Paul reminds us that we are all temples of God. And according to the Jewish faith, we know that God had a special place in the temple building. They thought of God as dwelling amongst humanity in the structure. But with the arrival of Jesus, Paul reminds us that God cannot be contained in a building. Rather, each one of us, being created in the image of God, are God-bearers to one another. And so in that way, we are his temples. So Paul warns us that destroying those temples out of envy or resentment, if we have God within us, those actions can sometimes drive God out of our heart. And the wisdom of the world will teach us and demonstrate that worldly power is the way to respond with our enemy. And God's wisdom seems foolish. But Paul indicates that all belong to God. And if that is true, even my enemy deserves fair treatment and should be treated as a temple of God. And then in the gospel reading, Jesus appears to be acting like a new Moses. The phrase, "You have heard it said," and then Jesus says, "But I say to you." Now, no other Jewish person in history had claimed that kind of authority over the law. So the passage is really testing our allegiance. If Jesus is who he claims to be, then he has a right to that authority. But if he is not, he's just another prophet, another wise man who is leading people astray. So we have to ask ourselves in our heart of hearts, do we really believe that Jesus is the Messiah? So Jesus uses three examples of revenge. One is, according to Jewish custom, slapping someone on the face with the back of one's hand was twice as insulting as slapping him with the palm of your hand. So a right-handed person would slap someone else on the right cheek, and that implies that backhanded blow. This shows that Jesus is interested here in how we react to insult and humiliation. We shouldn't cave in to feelings of resentment when we're insulted, slighted, or humiliated, and if we do, it shows that we all have to learn Christ's lesson of meekness and humility of heart. Secondly, by law, a Jew could be forced to hand over a tunic as a payment of legal recompense. And even in Jesus' time, poor men would have owned two tunics. But they wouldn't have handed over their cloak. That would have been unheard of. They only had one cloak. Most often, since a person only did have one cloak, he used it sometimes as a coat during the day, but he also used it as a blanket at night to cover himself up. So by urging us to give over our cloak as well as our tunic, Christ shows how the Christian heart reaches beyond the letter of the law and takes no personal desire for revenge when treated unfairly. And thirdly, during the time of Jesus, of course, we know that Palestine was under the control of the Roman Empire. Now, the forces of the Roman Empire were permitted to enlist the natives as guides or pack bearers for a mile of any journey they may be taking. By admonishing us to go along for that second mile, Jesus teaches us that the Christian heart fulfills every duty, even the humiliating and inconvenient ones, not with stern resentment or grumbling, but with generosity and enthusiasm. And so what does all of this mean for us? What do all these readings have to teach us? Meekness is often considered a weakness, as we know. But it actually involves a very virtuous effort not to strike or even dislike the person that struck you. Giving your time and possessions when someone doesn't have a right to them, or going out of your way beyond what any reasonable person would expect. How much strength does that take to accept it and practice it? The easy way would be to just let revenge consume us. But the easy way is not always the right way.